I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, some of the country's most important prizes for excellence in journalism were awarded yesterday, the Pulitzers. And for the first time, the judges recognized an online news organization. ProPublica won the prestigious award for an investigative project about the life and death decisions made in one New Orleans hospital in the wake of Hurricane Katrina. The winning writer, Sherry Fink, herself a doctor, will join us in just a few minutes. But first, the National Action Network is set to open its annual convention tomorrow. Its leader is the Reverend Al Sharpton, the longtime activist who calls the network a political, human, and civil rights organization. For nearly two decades, the group has focused on issues ranging from police brutality to inferior public education. But this year's convention takes place against a backdrop of an ongoing debate about whether the current administration, the president in particular, is doing enough to advance the issues of most concern to Black America. So we've called the Reverend Al Sharpton to talk more about this, and he's with us now. Welcome, or welcome back, I should say. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So who's scheduled to attend, and what do you hope to accomplish with the convention, which starts tomorrow?
Well, the convention is, as every year, is to try and deal with having a diversity of issues before our delegates from around the country. National Action Network now has 47 chapters. But this year is particularly interesting because we're going to end it with a spelled-out agenda and timetable of what we're going to do in the areas of education, in the areas of voter engagement, being that we have the midterm elections and turnout and registration is important, and what we're going to do in the criminal justice area. So we start tomorrow morning by dealing with what does health care and what does the health care bill mean to people that have had a disproportionate negative impact. And Health and Human Services Secretary Sebelius will be addressing the conference. Then we will have a roundtable on how we deal with an action plan on that. Tomorrow afternoon, Michael Steele will address the conference, as well as we'll be dealing with media, how people in the broad media deal with people of color. We have a broad panel all the way from MSNBC's Ed Schultz to Bill O'Reilly from Fox, to George Curry in Black Media. On the next day, Thursday, we'll deal with education. Education Secretary Duncan will be speaking. Democratic Party Chair, former Governor Kane, will be speaking. And on Friday, we'll be dealing with HUD Secretary Sean Donovan will address the Ministers' Conference with Bishop Blake.
Well, that's quite a coup just to have three cabinet secretaries to participate in a conference like this, as well as, of course, all the other, you know, media personalities and notables that you've mentioned. And first of all, I wanted to ask, are you gratified by their willingness to come? And why do you think they are coming?
I'm glad they're coming. I mean, they came last year. Year before that, we had all the presidential candidates. I think they come because you have hundreds of activists from around the country that they need their support and they respect the information. But I'm only gratified if we therefore take the information and get in the trenches and make something happen. And I think we've got to get out of just rap sessions and giving sound bites to actually what are we doing. We're facing a midterm election. A lot of the districts that our organization has chapters in, turnout is going to be crucial no matter who you support. So I think that I'll be gratified when we can say a year from now, this is what we targeted, this is the time frame, this is what we achieved. I think this is where we're trying to mature in terms of National Action Network. And frankly, I think the whole civil rights community has to go to a level of what is achievables rather than what is just rhetoric.
Well, that speaks to my next question, which is, as of course you know, because you were part of this, there's been this ongoing debate. And I don't think it just involves you and the broadcast personality Tavis Smiley, but you two have been associated with this in recent weeks about whether the president needs to have a specific Black agenda and whether civil rights leaders need to be holding him to a specific Black agenda. And I'd like to ask you to clarify your thoughts on this. You were one of the three people who met with President Obama in February, and that sparked Tavis Smiley's criticism, suggesting that Black leaders weren't doing enough to hold him accountable to specific results.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you raised it, because I think that debate has been discussed. I think that me and other civil rights leaders absolutely think there must be an agenda that addresses the specific needs of Blacks. I think the argument with Tavis was he distorted that, arguing against a point that no one had made but him. No civil rights leader I know thinks there shouldn't be a specific agenda for Blacks. and that we have a real dichotomy in terms of how black life is and white life is still in this country, which is why we had the meeting. You would not have a meeting, Michelle, with the president on black unemployment if you were not asking the White House to deal with the fact there was a disproportionate amount of blacks unemployed. So we felt the argument was bogus. I think where there may be a difference is on how we expect the White House to respond to a black agenda. But to act like some civil rights leaders or some leaders of organizations don't think there should be a black agenda, then why would they ask for a meeting on black unemployment? That is absurd.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm speaking with the Reverend Al Sharpton, and we're talking about his upcoming annual convention hosted by his organization, the National Action Network. It starts tomorrow. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the tone of our political discussion right now in recent weeks, particularly surrounding the health care debate. There was a lot of discussion around the way some members of Congress were treated, not just African-American members of Congress, but a number of others that they were, you know, screamed at. There were these angry demonstrations. Some of them reported that they were spat upon, that there were threats rendered. Now, of course, you know, people from both sides of the aisle say that they experienced some rather rough treatment. But I wanted to ask you about that. And particularly, I wanted to ask you about the tone of our conversation, because there was a point in your career, and you've had a long one, where people thought of you as a political provocateur who played hardball. So I wanted to ask you what you make of the tone of our politics right now. Do you think that it's, you know, appropriate given what's at stake? Just what are your thoughts about this?
I think that there's a difference between hardball and between going over the line to actually calling members of Congress names that are biased, racist, homophobic, and even spat upon. And I don't think any of us that has been contentious has ever done anything near that. I mean, in fact, in my career, the only time there was violence at a event or march that I led was when someone stabbed me. So I think that for them to compare those of us that have been engaged in social justice movement with people that have been accused of using the N-word against members of the Congressional Black Caucus or anti-gay words against an openly gay member of Congress is much different than those of us that would march in neighborhoods because people were killed and we were called the N-word. So I think that this is way over the line. The comparisons to me are ludicrous. And I think that we must on all sides say that there must be boundaries of even contentious civil discourse. For example, when I was stabbed leading a march in Bensonhurst and against a racial killing, I was the first one that said, we don't want any violent reaction. You know, we marched in Bensonhurst for 22 weeks. There was never any violence from us. We were had watermelons thrown at us and all, and we had meticulous nonviolent responses.
Well, there are though, times, though, and I've heard you speak about this, but I'm not sure that everyone has, which is one of the reasons I wanted to ask you about this. There have been times in your career when you've called people out as racist who felt that they were not powerful people. For example, the police officers in the Tawana Brawley case was a young woman who had made some very serious charges against some white police officers in upstate New York, and you felt that they were not being accountable for their conduct and pursued an aggressive inquiry into their actions for years, which at the end of the day was inconclusive, or which found that this young woman had not, well, the conclusion of the investigation was that these events had not occurred. And there are many people to this day are upset.
There is a huge difference in a person coming to a civil rights organization saying, I am a victim, and specifically making accusations against a person, and we decide to take up that case. And in me going up somewhere using racial names against everybody based on no accusation. So if I choose to believe a victim 22 years ago and a court says they don't believe her, you can't compare that with me going to a town calling everybody a racial name. I'm doing a specific cause with a specific person that made a specific report that a jury may not believe. That's like me saying that everyone that believed O.J. was guilty is racist because they believe he was guilty. That's a specific case. We're not talking about a specific case here. We're talking about people that are against health care that are calling members of Congress by their race or by their sexual orientation name. And I think I'm glad you had raised it, because a lot of people always say to me, what about Tawana Brawley 22 years ago? Well, I believe Tawana Brawley. What about the 22 years since then that I believe a lot of the victims that juries did agree with? Every one of those cases, people were on the other side, whether it was Abner Louima, where we won the case, or whether it was Sean Bell, where we didn't. Those are the nature of specific cases. You're not talking about specific cases here. Mm-hmm. You're talking about a blanket racist, homophobic use of language on a social issue that is not based on whether or not one believes allegations made by a victim or not.
And finally, though, to that end, you have spent a lot of time working with people who are very angry about things that they have witnessed, things that have happened to them, and whether the analogy is apt or not. You have to assume that many of the people engaging in these demonstrations on the side of the Tea Party are very angry, whether you agree with their analysis or not. Now, as a person who's been a leader in working with groups, do you have anything to say to the leaders of the Tea Party movement, or how you feel that they should perhaps best channel the anger that their followers feel, whether you agree with their analysis or not?
I think that, again, they must have the responsibility to set a tone of civility. I understand anger. We deal with it all the time. My best example is just a couple years ago when we were fighting the Sean Bell case. There were many, many people very angry that wanted to do a lot more than we would condone or support them doing. And I think that this is something that I would challenge the Tea Party people. So I don't think you're right. It's not a perfect analogy, but anger is anger. And I think that all of us have a responsibility, if we're going to call gatherings, that we publicly set the tone. That's what we've done, and that would be my recommendation to them.
The Reverend Al Sharpton is the founder and leader of the National Action Network. The organization is set to open its annual meeting tomorrow, and he was kind enough to join us by phone from New York. Reverend Al, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you, Michelle.